You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where the only thing more intimidating than our civil rights is our penises. That's a phrase you don't say very often. Our penises. As always, if you enjoy our trip here into the midside, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism. And if you want to tip your tour guides, remember, there's Patreon.
Jordan, anything you do, don't drop the metaphor. Can't drop the metaphor, no matter what you do.
Yes, I'm not sure what that means, but as you can already see, joining us this trip via Skype, or no, I'm sorry, via GChat, I haven't updated my outline here. Bad Justin. Do the prep, Justin. From our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Daniel, do you want to explain what that joke was? Because it's lost on me.
Of course it is. You, your metaphor with the trip and the midside, and you started to be like, if you enjoy the show, and you're like, oh God, panic, I dropped the metaphor.
Oh, I was made. You know, my joke didn't hit then. What?
Yes, your joke did not hit, if that was a joke.
My joke was, I was going to say our penises, if you enjoy our penises.
You didn't quite get there.
I didn't quite get there. It wasn't long enough. The joke wasn't long enough.
There we go. And we're back.
There was the payoff. All right. That was the money shot. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a great episode. Also joining us via GChat from the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. Are you doing okay, Elliot, with all this talk of our penises?
It certainly is one of my favorite subjects to discuss, certainly.
Well, you the other day said that story, the archive story from the internet about guys being more free to have sex with other guys, or was it white guys or something? What was that?
Yeah, it was an article basically saying that because of white privilege, straight white guys could have sex with other guys and not have their sexuality questioned. And of course, being empirically minded, I thought, well, perhaps I need to post this article on Facebook and see if I perchance could sway some of my straight white friends to slip me some salacious information. Like, see if they were holding back. Of course, there were no takers because the article was complete nonsense. But yeah, it was funny.
How do you even get from white privilege? Like, how is that one of the privileges of white privilege? And I didn't realize white privilege, like, there was an actual list of things that were you were privileged to. I thought it was just, like, a thing that existed that we can't really identify, which is what made it so dangerous. Daniel, are there a list of privileges?
I think I'm missing out on some of them, at least. Like, I didn't get to pick the presidential candidates this year, so.
Well, aren't you missing out on half of them?
Probably. That's probably the boring half, anyway.
All right, do you guys want to talk about some other stuff that we don't really understand?
Always.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's do that in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is.
Well, it was fun while it lasted. Earth, that is. According to scientists, we are empirically fucked. Well, at least if you believe this nonsense.
Well, wasn't that what Elliot was trying to do? Some empirical fucking?
This is a different kind of fucking.
Yeah.
Mostly having to do with greenhouse gases. So this is an article from Complex, but it was everywhere. If you missed it, I'm happy that you're you, and I wish I was you. The article is, enjoy Earth while it lasts, atmospheric carbon levels past the point of no return. Earth's climate problem just passed a point of 400 parts per million atmospheric carbon levels to, quote, more environmentally friendly levels ever again for the indefinite future. That is according to is, according to at Central Climate on Twitter.
Does it matter who it's according to?
Nah. Oh, well, here we go. Here's legitimate nonsense. NASA's chief climate scientist, Gavin Schmidt, told Climate Central, in my opinion, we won't ever see a month below 400 parts per million. Why is this epically bad? Because the 400 parts per million nonsense is what environmental freaks like Bill McKibben have said is the tipping point, the point of no return, the doomsday scenario. Basically, if carbon reaches, I think that is 0.04% of our atmosphere, then we are just doomed to burn in an eternal ball of flames. So here we are, folks, past the point of no return. Congratulations. We're fucked.
If there was ever a person to talk about legitimate nonsense, he would have the name Gavin Schmidt, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
That is a very, I'm just going to bullshit you kind of name. Yeah.
I also think we should make legitimate nonsense like a thing here in the Midside.
Yeah, not just, rumor nonsense. This is legitimate nonsense.
Like the entire presidential debate was legitimate nonsense.
Yes. So are either of you worried about this? You're going to step outside tomorrow, or is it just going to be swelteringly too hot for you?
Well, I live in California, and it's been 100 for like a week and a half. So global warming is real, guys.
I'm in Florida. It's already like walking into a sauna, even when you step out the door, like, and not in a relaxing way. So this is not going to affect me in any way.
Our anecdotal evidence proves everything.
So what you're saying is it's all true.
Yes, exactly.
I have an upside to this story, and it's not that it made me laugh, because this is all nonsense. And we've gotten into this many times in the show, so I don't want to rehash old arguments. But the upside of this is that if we are past the point of no return, can we stop giving a fuck about this now?
Yeah, I was going to say that.
If we literally cannot reverse course, which is what the NASA climate scientist is saying, what some of these other scientists are saying, if there is no way for us to turn it around at this point, let's not give a fuck anymore.
Well, but the problem is they're going to use the cancer argument. And it's, you know, if you have cancer and they give you, you know, 3 months to live, but if you have chemo, you can have 6 months to live. Well, you should take the chemo so you can live 3 months longer. They're going to say the same thing here.
Well, they might say that particular example is kind of hard, because it's like, well, do I want to live 3 months of a horrible, sick, but, you know, sort of fine life? Or do I want to live 6 months of a radiation induced horrible life?
But if you get the chemo, you could one day run a drug empire and die amongst the drugs you've cooked.
It's true. There's an upside to everything, especially chemo.
I'm not saying I agree with that argument. I'm just saying that's the argument they're going to use. They're going to use the quality of life, length of life on Earth argument, which I'm just going to throw back in their face as an objectivist and as an atheist. Is this going to affect the next 75 years?
Well, maybe. So a number that's being thrown around is that in 50 years, Earth's climate will be unsustainable for 1/4 of Earth's species, and millions of people will have to relocate due to rising sea levels. This is all shit we heard going to happen by now that hasn't happened.
Right.
They just keep pushing it further into the future.
Right. So hypothetically, when I'm 83, this shit is going to happen, right? So either I'm going to be so rich that it's not going to affect me, or I'm going to be so senile that I'm just going to be giving everyone the middle finger. I don't care.
I'm going with dead, but yeah.
I'd like to be alive at 83.
After that story about that, you know, the guy coming into the car that Daniel told a few episodes ago.
James gets slapped by a punk ass, that one.
Yeah, like, yeah, sometimes I think maybe, Justin, you might invite death a little bit earlier.
That's true. Agreed. So I'm fed up with this, but California apparently is ready to act.
Oh, California, yeah. I love this one.
Old action to fight climate change.
I made Daniel add this one to the news.
But taking bold action to regulate cow farts.
Jesus fucking Christ.
There is nothing so petty but California will not regulate it. Legislation signed this month by Governor Governor Jerry Brown requires California's dairy industry to answer for its contribution to global warming by making a 40% emissions in coming years. The gas, which heats the atmosphere 20 times faster than carbon dioxide, comes from the burps and butts of bovines. Oh, someone at the San Francisco Chronicle thought they were a clever fuck. This is all insane, but basically, cow farts go up into the atmosphere and then cause global warming. So we need to stop the cows from farting, or we need to collect their farts and reuse them here on Earth.
Well, that's why this whole thing's ridiculous, right? Because it's the ultimate catch-22. Because if I'm a farmer and you tell me I need to cut my cow methane output by 40%, you know what I'm going to do?
What?
I'm going to shoot 40% of the cows. I'm not kidding. That is the most... That's the simplest solution. But what happens when you do that? You get yelled at for animal cruelty. So what if I sell 40% of my cows to, like, I don't know, what's the industry called? The packing industry? The butcher? I don't know. What's that called? The butchering industry? Or is that something you do?
The butchering industry? Run by many lesbians? Yes. The butchering industry.
Well, who would I sell that to if I wanted to sell 40% of my cows?
The meat industry?
Yeah, there you go. Okay, the meat industry. I didn't know. I thought it had a fancy name. Whatever.
Do you eat dairy cow? I don't know how that works.
Well, I don't know. What are you gonna do? I don't want to waste them. It's 40% of cows. That's almost 50% of my cows. I mean, what am I gonna do? Go and get 40% magic beans by trying to sell my cow at the market?
It's damn near 4 out of 10 cows.
Yeah.
So this is one of the things that's funny about this is the article is very forthright about the fact that no one has any fucking clue how to do this. I.e. cut emissions. This is one of those prototypical government laws that's like, you should cut methane emissions by 40%. And the people go, how? And they go, oh, fuck, somehow. Just do it.
It's on you.
In my scenario, the government is a bunch of rednecks. But
which is funny because the farmers are more likely to be the rednecks and actually more likely to be smarter in this scenario.
Indeed. So one of the things is a methane digester, which works by isolating cow manure in airtight chambers where the waste breaks down and releases methane gas for power or fuel, costs several hundred thousand dollars. Of the digesters currently employed in California, quote, have stopped working.
Did Governor Brown's retarded nephew invent this and he's trying to make it relevant?
You know what this is? This is the hippie chick that the governor probably was, screwing around with, and she had her little pet cause from her college courses. And just to get some nookie, he agreed to sign the bill, so that she would put out for him. That's what this reeks of, to be honest with you.
You're telling me Limp Bizkit was all right all along? He did it all for the nookie?
For the nookie. Yeah. He did it all for the nookie.
Yeah? Yeah?
I thought what you were telling me is that Brown reeks of shit.
Well, that too.
What can Brown do for you?
I mean, the positive thing about this is now at one point in the future, I'm going to be able to capture my farts and unleash them on people, right?
That was a Simpsons thing, wasn't it?
Was it?
Yeah, well, they had like a fart tank, and then they farted into the tank, and they...
Simpsons did it. I mean, you can just say Simpsons that about anything.
Okay. This is my favorite. One study contemplated bovine backpacks to catch the cow's exhaust directly through tubes. Literally putting a fart tank on the butt of a cow.
Diapers. Oh my god.
This is really nerdy. This is really nerdy, but if anyone's ever heard... Fett's Vet by MC Chris about Boba Fett. The chorus is my backpack's got jets. Now it could be my bovine's got jets.
Oh my god,
that is shockingly nerdy.
It's still my backpack's got jets. Yeah.
Wow. So maybe it's because we're all increasingly nerdy that NFL viewership is down. Justin slipped in here in the middle without me noticing. But apparently, Oh boy.
What do you mean we just talked about it on the phone a half an hour ago, an hour ago?
Why would you reveal such a thing? Isn't it better to just yes and?
Shut up, Adam Carolla.
That's right.
Hold on, I'm going to scroll through all my emails while you're talking.
Thank you, Drew. So fewer people are watching the NFL on TV, and no one really knows why. The NFL Players Association admits that the trend is an obvious concern, but the league has sort of kept quiet about it. The decline has become a mystery for the media and surely for the NFL. The league's failure to discipline more aggressive players who have engaged in off-field misconduct possibly has turned off some fans, or perception that the league reacts too heavy-handedly in other matters, like Deflategate and the Saints bounty scandal, could cause others to think the NFL hopes to steer certain teams towards success and make it harder for others to succeed. Gentlemen, although I'm not sure Elliot has an opinion on this, maybe he does and is related to Gronkowski, but why do you think that people are turning off the NFL on TV?
Well, that's why Elliot's not watching the Patriots, because Gronkowski's played like 40 snaps in four games.
And he's barely seen any butt crack.
Yeah.
I'm just not happy they lost. Yes, they lost yesterday, I think.
No one is.
I'm not happy. That was a bad loss.
One person is. We know who's happy about it.
Rex Ryan's in his foot fetish.
Well, okay,
who's happy about it?
Fair enough, him. But I was referring to Roger Goodell.
Who's Rex Ryan, and why does he have a foot fetish?
Oh, well, there's just not enough time in the world, Elliot. Yeah. There's just not enough time.
Just Google Rex Ryan, and you'll find out everything you need to know.
Yes, okay. Like the fact that he got a jersey, or I'm sorry, he got a tattoo of his wife on his arm wearing his former quarterback's jersey.
Yeah, of all people, you got a Mark Sanchez tattoo. Like,
yeah, and his wife was in like this sexy, scandalous pose wearing another man's jersey. So anyway, anyway, the guy who is affectionately known as Butt Fumble. Yeah. Anyway, back to why viewership is declining. Maybe it's all that. Justin, what do you think?
It just amuses me that they're like, oh, we have no idea. Like, they're sitting around, like, picking their noses as if they're blind to everything that's going on. And then you read the comments on that article, and what's everyone complaining about? Colin Kaepernick. And I'm not blaming it on Colin Kaepernick. I'm saying that that's an example of what's wrong with the league right now. They've let the general cultural climate destroy the league. It's well on its way. I mean, I think Mark Cuban came out and said that it would be destroyed in 15 years, right?
Yeah. So you're basically saying that social justice has had an impact and will have a huge impact on viewership for the league.
Yeah, I think social justice, we talked about this for a long time. I think it motivated the Tom Brady witch hunt. I think it's motivated what's going on this year. And we just saw an example of this past weekend. So...
yes.
I'm sitting in my office. Well, in the cubicle in the front, which is not a receptionist area, but I basically act as a receptionist in the small, we have like not the main office, but it's a satellite office. That was the word I was looking for installing as I talked. That's how you do it, ladies and gentlemen. So I'm sitting in that cubicle, and one of the guys in the back starts complaining about his parlay bet. So a parlay bet is when you place a bet on several teams to win. And if they all win, you get money. If they all lose, you lose your money. So he bet $50 that six teams would win, and if they all won, he would get $2,000. Which, I mean, that sounds pretty good. Except when shit like this happens. The last team he had picked to win was the Cleveland Browns, which I would have asked him to begin with. You're picking six teams to win, and one of them is the Cleveland Browns? Like, do you not want $2,000? But the Cleveland Browns were actually in the game against the Washington Redskins. And they handed the ball off to their running back, Duke Johnson. And this guy had already won the other five games. So he was waiting on Cleveland to win to get the $2,000. And Duke Johnson, as he's falling to the ground, as he's being tackled, fumbles the ball. Then the Redskin guy tries to fall on it at the same time he is, one of the fat Redskin guys. And the ball squirts to Duke Johnson, and he picks it up and holds it in the air. But as he's holding it in the air, the ref doesn't see him. And the ref, notice how I am not using pronouns right now. That's called foreshadowing. The ref just looks at the pile and points in the direction of the Washington Redskins as if they have the ball. The call stays that way.
Yes. I want to add a little to the painting of a visual picture here, because I found the video of this. Video about six times from the angle it was. which is not the ref, the angle. It's the opposite side that the ref was on. And I'm looking, like, I can't tell who has the ball. Justin is off on this. Like, it looks very clear that it's difficult to decide who has the ball. And about the sixth time, to the left, and the player is standing beside the pile where everyone's fighting over the ball, holding the ball. Just standing there, holding the fucking ball, while the ref is declaring that the Redskins have the ball.
And to be fair, the Cleveland Browns are brown and have an orange-type uniform, and the ball is brownish, and the Redskins' red is also kind of brownish. So you can see why it's difficult to see who has the ball, especially when Duke Johnson, who's holding it, is black. So we've got all shades of the same color.
How dare you? That's an attack. I don't see color.
Well, that's why you couldn't see where the ball was.
See, that's called a setup.
Yeah. Okay. So the point is, this is a major fuck up by the NFL. It even went to instant replay. They reviewed it and they let the Washington Redskins still have the ball. And nobody has come out today and said, this is a bad call that was made. Usually the NFL will say that was a bad call. They'll punish.
No, the NFL defended it.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So it's even worse than that. They've defended it. You know, usually when there's a bad call that's so bad, they'll say someone made a mistake. They'll, you know, punish the ref sometimes. But the NFL defended it. The media, no one's talking about it. And the Redskins player even tweeted, there must have been two balls on the field because I had one too. The guy who supposedly recovered
wow.
it.
Wow.
So this is mass delusion going on. And why is Elliot. It mass delusion?
Stop. We're going to play a game.
Okay.
Elliot.
Yeah. But,
oh God. Would you like to guess why you think about this play?
Why you think it's basically being covered up? Why no one's holding this ref accountable? Because, let me add more context, the Redskins went down and scored a touchdown and won the game by 11. So you could argue this fumble changed the entire game.
Don't ask me sports questions, man. I don't know.
Not a sports question. It's a cultural question. Completely a cultural question. Why do you think no one is talking about this play?
Obviously there's a narrative that they want to keep. They're probably trying to craft a story and trying to make one of the teams look bad.
Close.
If only.
It's not
if
the team,
only.
Though. It's not about the teams, though. This is, again, it's about I don't the know ref. How Cleveland always gets involved in these situations, but this is actually about the ref. Now, to add a little more context, I'm sitting there watching it. My boss is watching it. The guy who lost the bet is watching it. And this other guy came over and was like, what are you guys watching? You sound all excited. And everyone's watching it going, how is no one saying this was a bad call? Why is there... Everyone's outraged. Except me. I'm sitting there quietly watching it and I'm going, there's got to be some reason they're not saying something. There's got to be something else going on. This is so obvious. And then
are you ready for the big reveal, Elliot?
What's the big reveal?
Justin?
The ref?
Drum roll, please.
The ref was the first ever female NFL referee, and she made the call too quickly. It was a mistake on her part due to her inexperience.
I see where you're going with this now.
It's a cover-up. They don't want her to look bad because the second they say the female ref fucked up, I mean, I would argue...
Then it's the good old boys club.
Right. That's...
I mean, what are the feminists going to say about this?
Right.
Look, you're going by some monologic... binary view of reality where there is a ball or there isn't a ball. Why can't there be multiple balls? Why can't both teams have had the ball?
Well, apparently both teams did have the ball, according to the Redskins guy. Isn't there a deep irony here, too, that it was given to the Redskins?
Yes, reparations, we'll call that. We'll call that the reparations call.
But we took it from the Browns and gave it to the Redskins. I don't even know how to feel about this.
Yeah, it's pretty blatant and it's pretty ridiculous. But this is what I was going to offer forward, by the way, as to why people are not watching the NFL, which is there was at least some sense culturally that the NFL was sort of the last, or sports maybe in general, or the last kind of meritocracy, where it's just you just have to be good to succeed. There's no you know, it's not, oh, well, this team has a bunch of daddy's money, so therefore they're clearly the better team. And especially in the NFL, in the area of the in the era of the salary cap, all the teams are working with the same amount of money. But in the past several years, maybe since the referee strike, remember that nonsense where they had to bring in the replacement refs? The officiating for games has just been utterly abysmal, not just against the Patriots, which is when you hear me normally complain, but against every team week after week after week. It seems like literally every week, at least one team gets screwed out of a win by bad officiating.
Well, and the Reds,
and not just the Ravens, not just bad officiating, but like horrific officiating.
Yeah.
Like this call or the Lions where the guy fumbled the ball to the back of the end zone or whatever, and the refs didn't see it, so they didn't call it, and thus the Lions lost the game. Like, it's just epically bad on a week-to-week basis now.
Yeah, and I was going to say the Ravens went all the way to the Super Bowl and won it on bad officiating, where Joe Flacco learned if you just threw the ball up, you'd get PI calls.
Yes, indeed.
And he threw no interceptions that postseason. And everyone's like, oh, wow, he played so well. No, it was all officiating, and no one wants to talk about that. I mean,
yeah.
I would make it a little broader. I think the referees are one symptom of the same problem, and I think it is the social justice thing. Because if you've wrapped Deflategate into this, not only are we convincing people that the referees decide the games, but we're convincing them that if you win consistently, you're a cheater. So why would you watch this if you believe that? If you believe the referees control the games, and if you win consistently, you're a cheater, there's no point in watching it. It's random.
Yeah. Elliot, are you still convinced that they just need to play shirtless and then you'd watch?
Yeah, at this point, even if they were shirtless, no.
Well, I think, for me,
as somebody who doesn't particularly watch sports, I don't particularly care about sports. If it's on, I typically don't watch it. Number one, the game is frustrating because the rules, you know, stopping every few minutes, you know, and giving penalties because they dared to celebrate a touchdown in the end zone. And I mean, for me, it's really excruciating to watch. I mean, why am I going to dedicate hours of, you know, my TV viewing time to a game that is interminable because of all these stupid, you know, rules and flags on the play? I mean, for a couple of hours, I can binge watch The Flash and catch up before the new season starts tomorrow. I mean, that to me, that's why I don't watch personally, because the game is just not fun for me to watch.
I mean, that's an offshoot of the same thing. I mean, well, you need some rules. Right?
Yeah, but you have to have some rules, but it's sort of the arbitrary application of rules and the sort of not just that there are some rules, but there is like an IRS level amount of rules.
Right. It's the idea that you can call holding on every play, but they don't for some reason. They just call it randomly. So every time your team does something good, you're looking around for the holding penalty before you celebrate. It's that kind of an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where's the flag? Oh, there's no flag. We're good.
So, speaking of people who have checked out of things, this group of guys has not just checked out of football, they've checked out of women. Yes, The Independent has done an expose inside the world of men who've sworn never to sleep with women again. Men going their own way.
I got so excited when I read the headline.
After two decades after what are they talking about? Two decades. Oh, they made a reference to Fight Club in the opening paragraph.
Yep.
Dumb. Tens of thousands of men have formed a real-life online community called MGTOW, or Men Going Their Own Way. Their first rule, abandoning all relationships, romantic relationships, with women. On Reddit alone, some 15,000 readers are subscribed to the MGTOW page, where it declares it is for, quote, men going our own way by forging our own identities and paths to self-defined success, cutting through collective ideas of what a man is. So these men have basically said that feminism has destroyed a lot of sort of male-female relationships and that it's just not really worth it. And that basically the feminization of the culture has not made it worth their time to engage or even to try to find romantic relationships. Some men are very proud that they're still virgins, that they're never going to have sex in their lives. But it's not that they don't want sex, it's that they don't want to put in the what they consider the extraneous effort to acquire it. So, Justin, are you not only a client, but also the president?
No, because this is a little bit too irrational for me.
Oh, wait, we see where the line is. No, yeah. BJs.
No, it's just it's extreme for me because there's always outliers, right? And it seems kind of like messed up to shut yourself off to the possibility of even an outlier. But I am extremely sympathetic towards this, especially out here in California. There's actually a quote from Scott Adams, who, Daniel, you are one of
Dilbert?
Yes, you are one of three people who have independently sent me stuff by him recently, by the way.
He's doing a lot of good work recently.
Right. Well, and it was he was on the Scott Rubin Report. Like, apparently this is a YouTube show. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, he's sort of moderate left of center, but atheist and kind of rational. He had a great interview with Yaron Brook, actually.
Okay, well, he also had a great interview with Scott Adams, so go Sweet. Check that out. And in the beginning of it, Scott Adams talks about when he was working in corporate jobs and people, told him he couldn't advance. They couldn't promote him because he was a white male. They were like, our senior management isn't diverse enough, so we can't promote you. So he eventually had to quit and move on. And Scott Rubin basically asked him, well, doesn't that suck? Didn't that make you sad? And he's like, well, yeah, no. And he said, the nice thing about when your effort doesn't, or yeah, your outcomes and your efforts, and I'm paraphrasing here, when your outcomes and your efforts aren't related, that frees up a lot of time. And I think that's where a lot of the root of this men going their own way is coming from. And it's certainly why I'm sympathetic towards it. It doesn't feel like my efforts to improve myself and to learn how to interact with people better and to make myself a better person and thus more desirable is actually making me more desirable and actually helping me get more dates in with the goal of finding a long-term relationship. So it's sort of like, why put in the effort? Not why put in the effort to make myself a better person. I'm going to continue to do that. It's not the sole reason I'm making myself a better person, but it's like, why continue to try and pursue relationships if it's regardless of if I try or not, it's the same outcome.
Yeah. I'm going to get Elliot's perspective on this in a moment from outside of the sexuality, but this, I'll push back a little, not that I'm not sympathetic with this group. I am, but I'll push back a little in the purely emotional, self-absorbed sense. Which is that this was not my experience in dating. I didn't have this experience at all. I didn't have this frustration. Now, I was dating just right before, the sort of social justice era took off, but still deep into like OkCupid era of dating. But I, put in a lot of effort, but I got dates. I had a short-term relationship. I had then found FISA, but so I don't emotionally understand where this is coming from. And I would just like to sit down with these men and have a beer and maybe have them have a little cry and talk it through and see what's up. But
well, you do that with me like weekly on the phone.
I want to get other people's perspectives. I want to see where they're coming from because it's just not something that I can intellectually relate with.
I mean, but to rebut with what you're saying, I understand what you're saying completely. Like, I get that your experience and I respect it and I envy it to a certain degree, but that's what's largely happened for much of my life where I hear all these stories of like these people meeting each other and there being all these attractions and they're, I don't mean like roller coasters and shit, but like, I mean, they're like, and they're into each other and it's obvious they're into each other and they're just okay being into each other. And like they date or guys get all these dates. And to me, it's like the people who in school said, oh, I never do any homework and I still get A's. That's how mythical it is to me. If I'm not saying you made it up, Daniel, cause I know that you're a reliable narrator and I trust you. But the reason I draw the comparison between this and people who said they didn't do their homework and still got A's is That's not real, people who said they don't do their homework and got A's. And I don't believe the stories that people are telling me are real because it's so foreign to my experience. That's how difficult it is for me.
Yeah, it's interesting. Elliot, is there anything even remotely similar in the homosexual world?
I think a lot of gay men get frustrated once they get out of their 20s and their 30s. I think the time of year where the time of people's lives where they're really exploratory and they're explorative. I don't know which word is right, but when they get out of that phase, I think a lot of them are disillusioned. And it's something that we don't talk about a lot when it comes to gay relationships. But I think in a lot of ways, gay couples are still trying to figure out how a relationship with two men will work, because regardless, gay or straight, a man is still a man. So a gay man, two gay men are still going to be two men in a relationship, and where in a heterosexual relationship, you might expect certain traditional roles, you don't have that. And I think a lot of people have become disillusioned with relationships because, the skills really aren't there. So when a relationship ends, I think a lot of guys just kind of, they either just stop pursuing relationships, and those are the ones that you see where they have the female roommates, like Will and Grace style, or they might move back in and take care of their family. I think that it is happening similarly, but I think that it's happening later on in life. I don't think it's happening for younger guys the way it is apparently in this article.
That was really the thing that shocked me about this, is that these guys are so young. Like the average is below 28 or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's just like, have you gone through that much adversity that you're willing to give up by 28? Like that's like quarter life crisis or like third life crisis.
It's not about going through a lot of adversity. There's two things here. And one, I want to reply to what Elliot said, and I'll fold that into what I'm about to say. So that'll be the second. The first thing is it's the opposite of the lack of adversity. It's about it's what I just said. It's the effort, output, outcome relationship. And when you see people around you who it's very easy for, or it's natural for, I think natural is a better word for easy, and you're not having that same ease, it's a struggle for you. It then just becomes natural for you to do other things where you get an output from. So for me, I know for me in my 20s, obviously all this stuff didn't exist, but for me it was sort of like, for the example in grad school was like, should I try and be social on Saturdays, or do I spend 8 hours in the library on Saturday writing my thesis, and then I can have my thesis done in 2 months and not have to worry about it the rest of the week? I can just do other things. And I would just do that all day and then go to the football game, and that was my reward for doing it. I would get an output there where otherwise I wouldn't. And then in undergrad, it was, watching shows, going to concerts, listening to music. Things like that had more of an output for me than all of the effort being put in, being dealing with that constant rejection. And the thing I want to fold into it with Elliot is, I think what Elliot said is very well taken. And if you look at the way that manifests in straight heterosexual relationships, with the way the gender roles have been broken down, and they continually to try to break them down, as we've seen with our discussions, and as we will see in our discussion of Batman versus Superman, as we've seen in our discussions of Snyder movies, there are legitimate things that the genders offer each other psychologically. And when you take away what a female has to offer a male psychologically, why is the male going to continue to do that? Why is he going to continue to try to offer things to the female psychologically? The trade is gone. And you guys are being like eerily quiet, so it makes me sort of feel like I'm either in a self-help thing or...
No, it's just that this is a little bit outside of my wheelhouse. But I think that for one thing, just to kind of broaden it a little bit more, there is a lack of skill when it comes to things like communication. So it may not necessarily be that you or that these guys may not are not good at sparking attraction or at recognizing attraction or at or anything like that. It could just be that the young ladies in question, they may not have the skill to respond or to reciprocate it. And we've said before in the culture, there is this kind of dearth of the ability to communicate, the ability to be open in terms of intentions. Everything is behind smoke and mirrors. So I think that a big part of this is not just whether or not a person is getting output from the effort that they're putting in. I think the big problem is that into whom they are putting in a lot of effort, that is not being reciprocated because that person doesn't really have the skills and it is a skill. You know, the ability to deal with other people is a skill, and doing so in the context of a relationship is something that has to be learned. And maybe I think that there are a lot of people that they haven't developed that skill yet.
Not only that, Elliot, but I think it's even worse than that, because it's not only the communication skill, it's the ideas in the culture, whether they're very general ideas or they're more particularized feminist ideas, are just completely unhelpful to women in their being able to pursue a mate. Like, you know, a more general idea being like, well, when it's the one, you'll know it. That is completely unfucking helpful to anyone, yeah. By the way. Mm-hmm. When is the right guy, you'll just know it. That is a destroyer of your mind. Because you will not just know it. There's no way to just know it.
Yep.
That doesn't mean anything.
And so many people say that in like their weddings. Oh, I knew it was him when we met.
Right. And do you remember what you heard at our wedding, Justin? We both looked at each other and thought, this person will never marry this person because she's Muslim, I'm white, she's brown, I'm an atheist. Like, it just wasn't going to work out. But it was attraction, and it was about hierarchy of values.
And that
was
mutual the only way respect. We ended up,
and respect, and about being together was each of us knowing what our hierarchy of values was. And if we had just sort of done the Tinder model that women are encouraged to do, where it was like, oh, this person doesn't meet this cursory profile that I've set up. Mm-hmm. Swipe right. I don't know which way is bad. Left is left bad.
Left is bad, yes. Which okay, is ironic. You would think let's swipe left for them, but...
True. If we'd done that sort of cursory thing, we would not be married today. But we didn't. We did this, as Justin said, mutual respect. Let's get to know this person because they're interesting and engaging, and we'll have a good time, and look where it ended up. And men are also sort of not taught that either. They're taught that aggression, anything that is... And by the way, aggression now means saying hello to a woman.
Yeah.
Yep.
The thing that is sort of almost ultimately masculine is necessarily bad. Therefore, their entire identity is bad.
Well, and that... Right. So, everything you guys are saying is folding into the problem that I've expressed to you guys, the experience that I've expressed. I mean, Elliot, I completely agree that the lack of communication skills makes this much more difficult. Because you try and talk to a woman, and it's like talking to a wall, and that immediately makes you feel she's not interested. You just move on. And it may not be that she's not interested. It may just be she doesn't know how to communicate.
Right. Buried in her smartphone. She can't, or whatever, she's in her iPad, and she's just... I mean, kids, especially the younger that these kids are, a lot of these kids are not, I can't believe I'm calling them kids, my God. But a lot of these people, they don't know how to communicate. Believe me, when I worked in Disney, I used to see it all the time. I mean, because customers, we have to be outgoing, talking to the guests. And that was a challenge for a lot of those kids that were in the college program, because that was a skill that they had not developed. They had faked their way probably through, you know, their presentations in school or something. But it wasn't until they were actually there that they were able to develop the ability to communicate and to talk and to understand body language, to understand the posture, how one posture invites conversation, another one could be offensive, and so on and so forth. And I'm not kidding when I tell you that every single one of those college program kids, especially in the last group that I worked with before my time at Disney came to an end abruptly, they learned and they still say to this day how much they've learned from that experience. So I think that that's a big, big part of developing into an adult that I think a lot of people aren't getting. They're not getting the importance of understanding how you verbally and physically communicate. You are always communicating all the time. So it could very well be that a girl is might be interested in you, but if she's hunched over with her hoodie up, you know, looking at her phone the whole time, you know, that sends the wrong message, and people don't know that.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said in that regard. And then Daniel, exactly everything you said plays into it as well. I mean, when you're talking about the Tinder model, the number of women that are just like, if you are below X height, just swipe left. Don't even talk to me. And they'll be like, I'm 5'2", so you have to be at least 5'10". And it's like, what?
Like, it's really frightening to me, because I can literally set up, like, not that Fiza would have ever done this. When I met Fiza, she didn't have Facebook, and she told me, I don't have Facebook because I have a real life. That's exactly what she said the first time we talked about it. But I can sort of hypothetically imagine Fiza's Tinder profile at that time. Like, if you're white and if you're not Muslim, swipe left.
Yeah.
And it's like, we would have never connected, ever.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I mean, in the
and mental... to be fair, throw my wife under the bus, to be fair, if someone had told me you're going to marry a Muslim girl, I'd be like, fuck no, I'm not.
Well,
that's
she's
insane.
An atheist at this point, isn't she?
Well, she is now, but she identified as a Muslim then.
Right, but that's what I'm saying about mutual respect, and that goes to the communication thing, is part of communication is having respect and empathy for each other to be able to listen and take seriously what the other person's saying. And this folds into the point about these ridiculous standards, is you're not seeing the other person as a person when you have these standards. I mean, in the mental gymnastics people do to get to these places, I was talking to one girl on Tinder who had a height thing. And I hadn't told her my height yet, because I always talk to them and then prove that I'm nice and cool. And then when they start talking to me, then I throw the height thing in and I make them look bad, basically. And this girl didn't take kindly to that. And she tried to compare the height to the weight thing. She's like, well, you would reject a girl if she was too heavy, right? And I wanted to be like,
this is not the same thing.
So the genetics of my height is equivalent to somebody not working as hard as me to take care of themselves. Like, don't get me wrong. The reason I want someone who's in shape is because I work hard at being in shape. I don't think that's unreasonable. That's a value that I would like to share with someone. So to say that weight and height are the same thing, that's offensive to me who's worked hard to be in shape.
It's insane. It's insane that we've allowed that comparison to foster for so long. Like, that we just don't metaphorically bitch slap these women who think that is at all the same thing. Like, oh, God, I fucking hate it.
It's just a rationalization. Anyway. And all of this that we're talking about, unlike the article, which was just basically a hit piece, this is why men are going their own way. Why am I going to put up with this stuff? Especially, we haven't even discussed the women who just want your attention because they do find you attractive, but either they're in a relationship or too scared to do something. So they basically halfway try and date you, but don't really date you. There's that whole other realm that's out there too.
Goodness.
Yeah. They get this sort of emotional benefit without having to have any of the actual relationship.
Yeah, and online dating has exacerbated that. The number of women who are like, let's just text for a while. And I'm like, well, till how long? Oh, till I'm comfortable. And then I say, well, I'm not comfortable with that. I'm not looking for a texting buddy. Chemistry is in real life. I would like to meet you in real life before I decide to talk to you. Oh, okay, well, we're just not on the same page.
No one brings this up, or maybe not in this exact way, but is the wanting emotional relationships with men via text or whatever sort of like, not the equivalent, but like maybe the converse of the men going their own way thing? Women who are just sort of satisfied having textual flirt relations with men, but not actually dating.
Ah, you didn't go as strong as I'm going to go. I thought you were going to go where I went. I don't think it's that. Hmm. I think it's the equivalent of guys using women for sex and not calling them again.
That is a next level. Yes.
They want half of the relationship. They want the emotional connection, the psychological reassurance of a guy being there for them and caring about them without connecting fully on the physical level as well. It's mind and not body, or you could argue it's emotion. I mean, there's so many things here, but for a simple division, it's mind and not body. And in the converse, the guy is body and not mind when he just wants to sleep with a woman.
Text me and chill. Yeah.
Oh, I could go. I could do a whole podcast series on this. So if you just let me talk, I'll keep talking. So you should transition to the next story.
Shut up now.
Yeah.
Wait, there's another story? Oh, there is. Fuck.
Oh, wow.
It's the episode title. Come on.
Bubba, witty transition. An East Tennessee State University student has been charged. Wait till you find out with what. Following an incident where he showed up to a Black Lives Matter protest in a gorilla mask, a banana connected to a rope. So,
if you go to themidside.com, it's the banner picture for this episode. It's a very amusing picture. I laugh, but I'm a racist, so
apparently. So,
and this was a Harambe costume, by the way.
Harambe.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know it was specifically a Harambe costume.
Well, we're fucking like the next King Kong movie is going to come out, and they're going to market it as Harambe versus Godzilla. Probably. That's the point we're at. That's animal. It's speciesist. Any gorilla is now Harambe. I mean, I think Mario dodges barrels from Harambe. I think they're going to rename Donkey Kong Country Harambe Country.
See, you're joking, but you know some nerd that likes putting out those memes, you know he's working on it right now.
I'm going to Google right now while you give the background here, Daniel. I'm going to Google Harambe Kong Country and see what comes up.
Yeah, so there was a Black Lives Matter protest. A student named Tristan Retrecht. These are one of those Favre names where it's like you can't pronounce these letters in the order they're in. So he showed up to this Black Lives Matter protest wearing apparently a Harambe mask and carrying around a banana on a rope, which people have said was a banana in a noose, which is interesting reading of it. And so the Johnson City Police Department arrested him and charged him with, are you ready for this? One count of civil rights intimidation in connection with the event. Civil rights intimidation.
It's not even a thing. Oh, God.
So apparently this is a law in Tennessee specifically, where it's, let me read the beginning of the statute. Commits the offense of intimidating others from exercising their civil rights is guilty of a crime. So if you basically make it so that you, basically in layman's terms, I think what this is trying to get at is if you intimidate others, like, you better not vote, otherwise your family will be killed. Intimidating them from exercising their civil rights, and thus you're committing a crime. Now the question is, what civil right by dressing up as Harambe? I mean, obviously it's a racist whatever, and I don't know, East Tennessee State University, it seems like it's a state university, so they don't really have any claim. But if it had been a private college, I wouldn't have cared if they had expelled him or whatever. But arrest him? Anyway, Justin, what did you find?
Okay, well, so Google autofill proves that people have already been searching this. And I'm going to press play on this YouTube video.
Donkey Kong Country. More like Harambe Kong Country.
Oh my gosh.
So yes, it already exists. People have already done this. There's also Harambe, Harambe Kong Skull Island. And there's also Harambe Kong 64. So yes, people have already done exactly what we said. So I mean, there's certainly an element of racism to all of this, and the racism should be decried. And that's why I haven't been on board with this Harambe meme for so long, because I was like, this seems really racist. Like, I get, like, I don't know, I just didn't understand what it was satirizing. Because for so long, I was like, well, it's okay they killed the gorilla. Like, they picked human life over the gorilla's life. So
well,
like,
they're satirizing, at least before this kind of stuff, I thought they were satirizing the fact that basically, even though they may not have used the term social justice warriors, the fact that social justice warriors made such a huge deal out of the killing of Harambe.
Yeah, most people I know that have been posting Harambe memes, that's been their motivation.
And now it's a double, it's gone to a second level where now it's satirizing the racist claims by these people?
No, people are just accusing them of racism just because they, in their racist stupor, associate being a gorilla with being a black person.
Dude, come on. Yeah. The guy, this East Tennessee student, he went there, dresses a gorilla holding a banana to a Black Lives Matter protest. He knew he was going to be called racist, and he did that on purpose because he knew they were going to call him racist. So he was like, fine, I'll just dress up like this.
Or trolling them, probably. It's
That's
the
what I'm
it's
saying.
The age of Milo. It's the age of Milo, you know?
Right.
What people say about you, you might as well just throw it in their faces.
Right. That's exactly what I'm saying. So I'm saying it's a second level now. Where it was before, it was just making fun of the outrage over the killing, and now it's making fun of the outrage over racism as well, right?
Yeah.
To an extent, yeah.
I guess I would have to, it's almost a case-by-case thing. It's when we start mixing race in with the gorilla stuff, like that has a history of slur. And so you have to be really careful. Like that's, there's a certain line and that's one of them. Like now, places like Clemson or whatever, I don't think Clemson officially banned it, but there's some universities
somebody tried to.
A university that have banned the Harambe reference because it is inherently racist. Now that in itself is racist. Because basically you're saying any mention of a gorilla is necessarily racist.
Right.
And it's like, oh, well, what are you thinking? So, I don't like that either. But
yeah, this whole story is just
Harambe
insane.
Died for our sins.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all insane because who knew you could be arrested for intimidating someone's civil rights?
Well, people, apparently Tennessee cops knew. Well, look at, think of all of the ways in which you could be like, I don't know, like is a Trump sign outside of a polling place now going to be considered intimidating people against their civil rights? That's kind of where we are as a culture.
Well, so. I said this in the thread. I want to turn this around on feminists. Aren't you saying me not being able to catcall me? You're saying me catcalling being wrong? Isn't that intimidating my civil rights, freedom of association, and freedom of speech?
The right to catcall.
This whole thing about rape culture, isn't that intimidating?
Yes! Yes! Yes!
Oh,
the
my
cat.
Oh,
my God.
Fucking worked. I can't believe that.
That was awesome.
The cat. You
right to catcall, and I immediately shut up. Because I knew there was a greater than 50% chance your cat would fucking meow. And it did right in the silence. Oh, I'm like a comic fucking
beautiful.
Genius.
Good job, River. You're part of the show now. But no, isn't rape culture? Isn't this idea of rape culture? Isn't that intimidating to my civil rights? Making me feel like I'm part of a rape culture so I shouldn't approach women?
There's an interesting cultural argument there. Might want to take that up with a judge in Tennessee, but I don't know. I see where you're going. It's all a matter to me of, like, can't you just all be fucking adults? Like, this guy was in a gorilla costume. It's clearly in bad taste. The university should suspend him or whatever, but can you just get on with your protest? Why do we have to arrest the kid?
I don't think he should even be suspended. I mean, just put it in the newspaper, publicly shame him, like, and he won't even be shamed. Like, there's nothing you can do about this. Like, he didn't do anything harm. If a guy wants to dress up like a fucking gorilla and wave a banana to be a racist idiot, this is America. You can do that. Like, the minute we start suspending people and re-educating them and shaming them for these things, like, we've
lost our
perspective.
Well, the suspending thing, it's because, I mean, this is a state university, so maybe they shouldn't, but if it was a college, like, a college has a right to decide the kind of people it wants at its university.
Oh, yeah. That's like on your team, so, right? You can suspend a player for any reason you want. Like, hey, coach, last night I watched the season premiere of Supergirl. Suspended. Like, yeah.
So, right. Like, so having a conservative opinion, you know, not something you should be suspended for. Having a liberal opinion, not something you should be suspended for. Dressing up like a gorilla with a banana at a Black Lives Matter protest. Not so sure I'd want that guy at my university, but
right or on your
anyway.
Team.
We've been talking about the news for an inordinate amount of time.
All right, so why don't we do this then? Why don't we talk about some reviews, some trailers, and then Wonder Woman? Does that sound good?
Sounds good.
All right, all right. It's time for the Hopeful Romantic with JML.
Their favorite episodes. I can't. wasn't focused on.
Let's hit some reviews here, and there's three shows I want to review this week. And the first is actually our first ever Midsider review. Unsolicited, Midsider Nolan sent us a review, or sent me a review for Luke Cage, and I would like to thank him for it and encourage all of you to do the same, because, first of all, he saved me time, because now I don't have to review
because,
the show.
First of all, free content.
Yeah. Second of all,
we don't have to watch that terrible show, which I'm sure it is.
Right. So let me read to you what he said, then I'll tell you the question I asked, and then he'll give his response. I'll give his response. So this is Nolan's review of Luke Cage on Netflix. Don't know if you attempted to watch Luke Cage, but my God, it's garbage. I'm going to pause. You can tell he's a Midsider.
Yep.
Continuing. Just another entry in the ever-expanding trash heap that is the MCU. Again, obviously a Midsider. Luke Cage isn't worse than Jessica Jones, but it has extremely boring characters and boring plot. All right, so enough, with that, I was like, okay, well, thank you, Nolan. You've saved me from ever having to watch this show now. Like, it sounds like season two of Daredevil was in the beginning, why we didn't even get past episode one, Daniel.
Yeah, indeed. I still haven't.
Well, I didn't watch beyond it.
I did, and I'm really sorry I did. You know, because and Jessica Jones, I cannot believe I forced myself to sit through an entire season.
You were raped by Jessica Jones, Elliot.
Bro, you have no idea, man. It was just, ugh.
Well,
the only
I
reason
that
I watched it was for David Tennant. He was the only reason I watched. And so, and now Luke Cage, I don't care. I just, I mean, they've been advertising it, and I'm like, I don't care.
So I found it ironic that Nolan used the term another horrible entry in the MCEU.
It's rape. Yeah, it's rape talk, oh. Isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. That's funny. So yeah, I also asked.
I want to get that drop of Justin's fake amused laugh. I just want to play it all the time.
So the thing I followed up with, if you were bald, Brian, we could do that. But it's too much effort for me to put all these fucking drops in. the other thing I asked him about, because this is one of the things that I look forward to with Luke Cage, is Luke Cage is more of a libertarian superhero in a way that he's a hero for hire. That means he charges for his services. So I asked Nolan about that. I go, well, doesn't he do that? Like, isn't he a hero for hire in the show? And this is what Nolan said. They dismissed that concept immediately in the first or second episode, where he's offered money from a store owner in exchange for protection against some inner city thugs and rejects the payment. And wait, there's more. That's my aside. Despite needing it. So he's not just being generous in the fact that he's saying, I don't need this money, so I'm not going to take it. He's being generous in the fact that he's being self-sacrificial. So if anyone still believes that people's problem with the Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman was that Superman wasn't altruistic, you're fucking dreaming. They're doing this on purpose. It's very obvious.
Yikes. That was the only appealing thing about Cage, that he was a for-hire superhero.
Yeah, and I wanted to see how they handled that, and it would have been a different entry into the MCU.
Nope.
Yeah, I think we just need to steer clear of anything Marvel on Netflix, basically. It's just,
I know.
Because it's just terrible.
We can say Netflix, but Doctor Strange, are we going to see that in theaters?
I'm gonna say
I think we kind of have to.
Well, because it's Cumberbatch and Mickelson, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the actors are so, it's like the best pairing of actors, I think, in MCU, isn't it?
Among them, certainly, yeah.
Yeah. So we'll review that.
Maybe I'll pay to see like Michael Moore's new documentary, and then I'll just sneak into Marvel.
Wow, that's a scathing comment there.
Thank you. Right. By the way, are you done?
Well, I was just going to say thanks to Midsider Nolan for that review. It was greatly appreciated, and I'm sure the other Midsiders greatly appreciate it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome. Thanks, Nolan.
We're going to have to watch it now. Thank you, Nolan.
I was going to make a quick Michael Moore reference, which is I've been watching Triumph the Comic Dog's election special.
Oh, yeah,
Hulu.
I see that on Hulu, and I was like, who the fuck is watching that? Because we share the Hulu account.
Fucking hysterical, by the way. But one of the jokes that made me spit water, I was drinking water, maybe literally spit water, was he was at the Republican convention. He's like, I don't understand why you're voting Trump. Trump, New York, when Trump was being a tycoon, and he was a bigger Democratic supporter than Michael Moore's bra.
That's good. That's good.
I like it.
I spit water. It's a great, great. The whole thing is, and he skewers both sides. Like, he fucking decimates both Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. It's awesome.
Sweet. All right, want to move on to our second review now?
Sure.
I didn't see it, so it's going to be up to you.
It's just me. I'm just going to give a brief review of this. My two co-hosts here in the thread saw my reactions to the show as I was watching it on Hulu. So the next show is The Good Place. It stars Kristen Bell and Ted Danson, and it's about a woman who Kristen Bell plays was accidentally sent to quote-unquote The Good Place. Ted Danson is the designer of The Good Place. And by the way, Daniel, I was going to tell you to watch this show before I watched the full episode, because you know who Ted Danson reminds me of in this episode? In this show?
Tim Gunn?
No.
Oh. Okay, who?
He reminds me of Chris Mortensen.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because, like, he's...
ESPN host Chris Mortensen?
No, director of the documentary The Money Changers, and what was the Ayn Rand one called?
Ayn Rand. And The Prophecy of Atlas Shrugged, but yes.
Mm-hmm. So, the director of those two documentaries, because the Ted Danson's character has been... This is his first time designing a town for people to live in The Good Place, and he's very good with the creative part of it, but he's very awkward and strange outside of it and very nervous about how it's going to be received by the people who live in it.
Funny.
And he also looks vaguely like him, like the way he dresses and acts, like he carries himself. So I think you would appreciate it from that realm. But the actual plot of the show is Kristen Bell's character is put there by accident. So, of course, things start going wrong because the design is thrown off. So this is the mistake Ted Danson's character has made, is he's let someone into The Good Place who doesn't deserve to be there. Because to be good, you have
Kristen
to be
Kristen Bell. Kristen Bell throws off galactic feng shui.
Yes. Which is part of why it's funny, because it's Kristen Bell and, like, no one hates Kristen Bell. So it's good casting in that way. Well, that's because you're gay, Elliot, okay? No straight man hates Kristen Bell, okay?
No, it's not because I'm gay. It's because I can't stand people who use classic Disney characters for political stuff. Like she did with Mary Poppins.
That was a very gay statement you just made.
Well, yeah. I mean, of course.
As a straight guy, I want to hate her for that, but it's Kristen Bell. Anyway, the first episode was directed by Drew Goddard, who we all know is great. He's what made the first season of Daredevil good, because he was an executive producer on it. He directed the first two episodes. He did Cloverfield. He did Cabin in the Woods. He's done Buffy episodes. He's a great writer-director. So he directed the first episode. The directing and the production is wonderful. Ted Danson and Kristen Bell are great in it. So this is a show where all the points I give it are purely for production value. It's tremendously, the production value is great. There's good things about the writing. So I give it like a 6.5, a 7, all for that. But the morality of this show is so screwed up that I can't watch it. It literally is, she's a bad person because she's selfish. And she has to learn to be selfless in order to prove she belongs in The Good Place.
Interesting. I mean, not, but interesting. But not. It's so conventional.
Yes.
Like, I just wish one of these shows would just break convention just to be fucking different and radical and, I don't know, outsider Hollywood. But they're all sort of just patting themselves on the back about her being brave or doing a show about religion or whatever. But it's like, fuck, you're the most conventional fucking message you could possibly come up with. Jesus.
Right. I think that's a great point. The idea that they think they're being unconventional by, hey, we're daring to do a show about morality. But you know what this show is? This is just My Name is Earl with Kristen Bell in it.
Oh, that's funny.
All right, let's move on to the last review. And I think this is one we've all seen.
Yeah.
So, Designated Survivor. And I won't give my review up front. I'll let you guys talk. But the one comment I will preface with this is I watched this on Saturday night while my laundry was in and while I was folding my laundry. And as I was watching it, there were several points where I wanted to stop, but I couldn't stop watching it. I watched the first two episodes. So that has to say something about the show. So what do you guys have to say?
Yeah. What it says is Kiefer Sutherland. That's what it says about the goddamn show. This show could be summed up in Kiefer Sutherland is a good actor. That's the show. But to give the premise of the show, which is a premise that's sort of... I don't know if it's necessarily a unique premise. I think many shows have sort of batted around this idea. And I was telling Justin that not that I should get any credit for this because I didn't actually do anything about it, but I actually sketched out a show based on this exact premise when I was living in D.C. the first time. Premise is, Kiefer Sutherland's character is like the secretary of the agriculture?
Housing and urban development. Yeah.
HUD. Some nonsense.
HUD.
Some nonsense.
HUD.
Horrible cabinet. Yes, thank you. Thank you.
He's the secretary
after the third
of,
time.
He's the secretary of Housing Cuddy.
There you go. Huddy. Huddle. Huh, funny. Okay, so... And he is chosen to be the one symbolic cabinet member who doesn't go to the State of the Union address. This is a real thing that happens, by the way. This is like an actual secretary of like nonsense is kept out of the State of the Union. And while he is sitting, while Kiefer Sutherland is sort of watching the State of the Union on TV, it cuts out. And then he goes to the window and fucking the Capitol's blown up and the entire government's dead. This happens in the first 10 minutes, so this is not a spoiler. Yes. This is the premise of the show. So he is immediately elevated to President of the United States. And it's like, well, what is the fallout of the housing and urban director secretary being elevated immediately to the President of the United States? Some general thinks he's a pussy and wants to remove him. Other people want to take advantage of his power. Speechwriters don't respect him. And his daughter is, you know, upset that she had to move into the White House. So,
First world problem.
Exactly. So it's sort of that. My review of the show is that it is 100% carried in its entirety on the back of Kiefer Sutherland's acting.
And Maggie Q being cute.
Maggie Q is amazing.
She's fine. But his acting is so good. Like, in every scene, he is genuine. His emotion comes through. His fatherly stuff is so touching, the way he does it. But the show in general, I'm two episodes in, I think that's all that have aired, is kind of trite. Like, it just hits on every single one of the things you would expect to see in a political drama, including, like, you know, Kiefer's the ever-loving Democrat, and, like, his one of the conflicts he goes through is the evil Republican mayor of Michigan who's going after Muslims. It's like, really? Like, this is where we're going with this show? And, of course, Cal Penn is in it, and he gets harassed by the D.C. police because he's Muslim. And it's very slow, and for good reason, because after about 10 minutes, you're like, okay, I'm over the premise. Now what happens? And the question is, we're not sure because it's so slow and plodding. So we'll see. I'll give it like 5 episodes, I've determined. And if it doesn't pick up by about 5, it's not going anywhere. Elliot, did you have anything different?
I am shaking my head at you, Daniel. I am so shaking my head at you. Slow and plotting is not the wording I would use to describe this show. I absolutely was enthralled because it really does grab you within the first 10 minutes. I mean, it just hurdles you through. I think, of course, it's starting out, so a lot of the development that still needs to come, I think that it's on the way. But I think a lot of the conflicts that are going to stretch out throughout the season has been laid out very well. I think we already know just from Maggie Q's character investigating that things may not appear as we're being led to believe. And yeah, he's, you know, Kiefer Sutherland's president is a Democrat, but let's be honest, his scene with the Iranian ambassador, let's just be honest, Obama would not do that. That's just, nor would Hillary. Or Trump, for that matter.
You mean the what if Jack Bauer were president scene?
Yeah, like when he tells him, like, get, you know, get those people out of our. I mean, it was really well done. I mean, I just, you know, I wish that we had leaders that, you know, had that kind of courage nowadays.
I wish Jack Bauer were president too.
Me too. My goodness. But, and I think that the, there's a lot more coming. I'm like Daniel, I have to wait to see where it's going. But I actually would give it, about a 7 out of 10. I think I really liked it a lot. We just have to see where it's going. And as far as, you know, Cal Penn being in the show and the mayor of Detroit, I think it was Detroit, wasn't it? No, it was the governor of Michigan, right?
Governor of Michigan.
The governor of Michigan, yeah. He was, you know, doing martial law and putting Muslim. And, you know, I got to say, guys, you know, a year ago, I would have laughed at that as being ridiculous. But in the age of Trump, I don't know, man. I just do not know anymore.
No. No. Look, I hate Trump. I am the most vocal anti-Trump person you'll meet. Even in the age of Trump, we're not putting Muslims in internment camps. Not happening.
Yeah, we're not beating a 17-year-old Muslim boy to death for no reason.
Yeah, that's just... Look, I mean, look, I'm also not all that pro-cop, and cops, given the option, will beat someone to death, but it won't necessarily be a Muslim. That's kind of my point.
Like, yeah.
They'll beat a white guy to death. That's fine. As long as there's a body to club with a stick... A police officer will club. Be there.
As long as or they dog. Hang out their rage that they peaked in high school on or someone in high school. Puppy.
Harmless rain, little puppy in the backseat of a car snow, wagging its tail.
Rain, snow, sleet, or steel.
I never thought we'd go after steel? Cops on this show, but yeah. We just did. So, all right.
Well, yeah.
Daniel, I shared a lot of the same misgivings you did about this show. The title is Designated Survivor, and I question how that sort of premise can continue beyond, as you said, the first 10 minutes. And I went into it worried about that. I was like, how are they going to continue this idea beyond, like, a season? Yeah. And then they watch and they show the explosion. And then immediately, they fucking Tarantino it! Where they go, 15 hours ago, and I went, God damn it. And then they hit every sort of, not just political cliche, but family drama cliche. So, of course, the husband and wife, they get to the White House very easily, Kiefer and his wife. And then they have to find the kids. So, of course, they can't find the son because he's being dumb and dealing drugs. And they don't know where he is. And they have to do this whole drama of, oh my God, the son didn't obey us and didn't stay at home. And he was out when he shouldn't have been. And now there was a terrorist attack, so we can't find him. I mean, this is like in any like zombie apocalypse movie where the son's somewhere else and they have to go get him and reunite. It's been done so many times. And then, of course, the resolution of that was they tried to hang a lantern on it by the son saying to the Secret Service, how did you find me? And the guy acted like he did this complicated thing. And he's like, then he was like, no, not really. You're not a mastermind. I just pinged your cell phone. So it was contrived drama to begin with. It could have just been like, don't worry, sir. We'll find him. We'll ping his cell phone. So that was just useless writing that was made just to fill time. I mean, everything good about this show is like the moments when he decides to start acting like Jack Bauer. Like when he lied to the governor. Like what was the lie to the governor about to get the governor to agree?
Some of the Muslims that they had rounded up, he said a couple of them were undercover agents doing a terrorist sting.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't have code word clearance to tell him who the names were, so he had to let them all go.
Right, that's a very Jack Bauer move.
It was
a great moment. It was a great moment. But as you said, all of the great moments in the show are like 5 minutes when Pussy HUD Secretary turns into ass-kicking Jack Bauer, and then he goes back to being Pussy HUD Secretary.
Right.
So,
and then the other plot that Elliot's referred to about, we're not really sure who committed the terrorist attack, because there's a bomb.
It's the government.
Well, it might be, anyway. But the point is... That's a 24 plot.
It is, literally. Every season of 24.
Right, you find out there was a terrorist attack, and you think the obvious people committed it, and then the non-obvious people committed it, and then Kiefer has to save the day. So this is like, it's 24 repackaged poorly. So I give it like a 5.5. And all 5.5 points are because of Kiefer, and because Maggie Q, and because, oh my God, Kiefer Sutherland's chief of staff, Robbie Amell's fiance is fucking hot.
You never seen her before? She was on Supergirl. She was the Banshee.
Yeah, I watched that one episode, the Flash crossover one, you mean?
Yeah, she was in the Flash crossover.
Yeah, that was her. Those two girls were in such bad makeup because the other girl who was in it, Britt Morgan, was on the show The Middleman, and she was good in that, and she was bad in that show. I just don't like Supergirl, man. Don't get me started.
All I want to know about the show is when is he going to the bathroom?
I used to hate that about when people said that about 24.
It's true.
I use that as an example of naturalism. When people ask me what a naturalist is, and they're like how they perceive like art, I use that as an example. It's somebody who watches Jack Bauer do amazing things on 24, but then they criticize it because they don't show him going to the bathroom.
To be fair, they did show Secretary Hud throwing up.
Yes, they did.
Yes, they did.
So they answered your question, Daniel.
But that was another That was another one of those cliche goddamn things where it's like, I'm going to talk to the guy in the stall next to you about how shitty the new president is. Oh, it turns out it's the new president. Burp, 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 egg on my face.
Well, you got to be a special kind of asshole. The whole world's falling down around you and you're just talking shit about the president while taking a shit. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I just, that's like, as even if Hillary or Trump is president, if the whole world went to shit, like, my first thought wouldn't be to talk shit about them. You know what I mean? There'd be so many other things I'd be concerned about.
But I like his reaction. I like the character's reaction, though, you know, because Kiefer Sutherland appreciates the honesty. So he doesn't condemn the guy for speaking the truth. On the contrary, he appreciates it.
Well, speaking the truth isn't bad, but I would question the guy's priorities.
Well, I mean, I would too, but I think that at that moment, I think that it reveals a lot about that character, Kiefer Sutherland's character. That
first of all,
doesn't it show that he also lacks priorities to be president?
First of all, do not talk to me when you're in the adjacent stall of a bathroom. That is not conversation hour. We are not women. Like, we are not there to yap. We are there to drop a deuce and get out. Okay?
Not to mention he had to hear the guy throw up, right? Like, the guy just threw up and the next thing he wants to hear is you talking shit about the president. Hey, dude, I knew you just threw up, but, like, I don't care how you are. Do you want to hear how I feel about the new president?
Yeah. By the way, don't mind my feet. Wide stance. Wide stance. So. I give it a 3.25 with the potential of getting better only because it's a political drama and I love political dramas.
Elliot, 1 through 10.
I told you, 7.
He did.
That's right. Sorry.
7.
I forgot it because I can't believe you gave it that.
I loved it.
I knew you were going to. This reminds me of, like, Person of Interest.
Another show that Daniel found boring, which I cannot understand at all.
I did as well. All right. So let's take down some trailers. And Daniel, before you do your little voice here, you've been replaced by another Daniel. Midsider Daniel sent about 12 sound clips of Trailer Takedown, and I picked
this one. Is the first time in all of history that a job has been taken away from a Mexican and given to a white person.
I don't know, is he white? I don't know. I see his little picture on Gmail and I'm not sure, so I'm gonna refrain from that. So I'm gonna play that right now.
Trailer Takedown.
Thank you, Midsider Daniel. You are now the official Trailer Takedown voice for Welcome to the Midside.
Yeah. So let's all right.
All right, let's
do it. Thank you, Daniel, and I appreciate it. Okay, anyway, moving on. Okay. What are we taking now?
The first one is called Patterson, and it's about Kylo Ren as a bus driver, I think.
That's right. That's right. It is Adam Driver. Literally driving a bus, and he's a poet, and he's profound.
This sounds like the prequel.
This trailer,
a prequel to The Force Awakens.
This is where he goes to the dark side.
The Force takes a nap. Because this trailer was fucking boring. Nothing happened in this trailer. It was naturalistic garbage piece of shit. There was no discernible plot. The characters were dumb. I couldn't tell who was good, who was bad, what was happening. It was disjointed and terrible. I will never see this movie. And in fact, I will, in protest, the next Star Wars movies 5 times instead of 6.
Well, this is those movies, you know, how he had a big hit with The Force Awakens. You know how it is. They always want to, you know, try to do something artsy to kind of maintain their, I guess, their actor or artistic credibility within the industry. You know,
what does he want out of my head?
He played an emo kid in Star Wars.
I know.
What more do you want?
But that's what I mean. Like, this is what happens. This is what they do. They have a big hit, a huge money-making film, so they want to downsize and they want to go independent and all that to keep their artistic credibility. That's literally what this is. That's why he's part of this.
One of the big reveals in this godforsaken awful trailer is that he's a bus driver in the city of Patterson, and his name is Patterson. Ooh, good swoon. Jesus.
So we're all tackling this?
I've never seen this piece of garbage.
Let's go on to the next one, because I want to see the next one.
So, also known as Designated Survivor of the Movie. No, I'm being facetious. The next movie is Jack Reacher, Never Go Back. This is, of course, an action franchise starring Tom Cruise that isn't Mission Impossible. I have a feeling that Daniel and I are going to tackle this while Elliot's going to hug it.
Jack Reacher, Never Go Back.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, baby. I like the first Jack Reacher. I don't know if you guys saw it or not, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to this because I like Cobie Smulders. I want to see what she brings to the table. I mean, in the trailer, looks like she kicks some ass there. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm not gonna tackle
just
it. I'm gonna go
based
see
on
it.
A series of books.
Yeah.
By James Patterson.
No, it's Lee Child.
Is it by James Patterson? Because that would be hilarious.
No. No. Lee Childs is the name. I think.
Oh well. Yes. Because when one thinks, oh God, no, it's not fucking James Patterson. It's Lee Childs. So much fucking better. Jesus.
I'll slap you, Daniel. I will slap the Mexican right out of you.
I have no interest in this kind of movie whatsoever. This just looks like, you know, The Bourne Identity, but with a smaller, gayer, straight lead. So just fucking no. Tackle.
And I also, to add to that, do not like Cobie Smulders.
Really? You don't like her?
I didn't like her in How I Met Your Mother. I didn't like her in The Avengers. I didn't like her when I saw her without makeup on the Vegas Strip. I don't like her.
I'm still going to say it. Screw the both of you.
So the last one here, it'll be interesting to see who read the most recent outline, is the teaser for the new Pirates of the Caribbean movie was released, Dead Man Tell No Tales.
Also known as the tale of Javier Bardem's CGI hair.
Basically, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you both read the outline. I am going to hug this, even though I have no idea what the movie's about, besides the fact that he wants to fight Jack Sparrow. Just because I love the first Pirates movie, I enjoyed all the other ones after that. I think it's an iconic role for Johnny Depp, and I will see every Pirates movie Johnny Depp is in until they stop making them. So I'm hugging it just for that reason.
Better hope he doesn't star in the Pirates of Penzance. That's
very
different.
I am the very model of a modern
Is he playing Jack Sparrow?
Oh, God. Are you playing Jack Off Sparrow?
Tim Burton will direct.
There's one reason and one reason only that I will be seeing this movie. That is because I made Fiza see Star Wars, and so she will make me see the next Pirates movie. Because she is obsessed with the Pirates movies like I am obsessed with Star Wars.
Hey!
They are her favorite series of movies. Jack Sparrow is her favorite character of all time in any movie or literary anything. Maybe Francisco D'Anconi has knocked him off one peg. Maybe.
Hey!
Maybe. Hey!
But she fucking loves Jack Sparrow.
Hey,
so she'll make me... I told you you're the same goddamn person.
I know,
it's kind of fucking scary.
It's a really eerie thing. Like, has she seen Lost and like Sawyer? Does she like House?
She hasn't seen either of those, but this does remind me of the episode where House realizes that Amber is basically just the female version of House.
You mean of Wilson? Oh, no, you mean Wilson realizes Amber is the female version of House.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
You said House realizes Amber's a female version of House. Yeah.
I couldn't remember if he realized it in that scene or if Wilson did. I couldn't remember.
Oh, well, the point is, yeah, Wilson's dating the female version of House. Yes.
Yes, indeed. So I would normally tackle this piece of shitty nonsense CGI bullshit. But seriously, you do need to check out the teaser just for Javier Bardem's hair.
Yeah.
Is there anything else in the teaser? It's like Javier Bardem's hair and then the dude in the cell who I have no idea who he is.
The guy who looks like a ragingly gay twink.
Yeah. I mean, like every person who's not Johnny Depp in these movies.
Yes.
Or indeed. Jeffrey Rush.
Twink from William? Is that who Tom Ford twink? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So thank you to William for that.
He kind of is one, so he knows.
Oh, them's fighting words.
Yeah, he is going to kick my ass for it, too.
Anyway, I guess I'll hug this one.
Are like, you hugging
like,
it?
Kind of like gross hug.
I loved the first one. The second one was okay. The third one I fell asleep in the theater. I am not even joking you. I passed out and the person next to me had to wake me up when it was over because I was so bored and it was so long. I just fell asleep and I never actually even bothered to see the fourth one. Because it's Disney, I will probably hug this and go see it. But I got to tell you that the Pirates franchise, I think after the second one, particularly, it didn't really do it for me anymore.
Boo!
Yeah, I agree. Mostly. One other thing I was going to say, what was it? Oh, you know, I would go see this movie very happily if they had a version where there was no picture and no dialogue and they just played the soundtrack. Like I would actually pay money to just sit in a theater and just listen to the dun 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 dun
dun. It's a good theme. It's a beautiful thing.
I'm gonna send you the nerdcore version of that.
The Disney is it California Adventure has the nighttime show that has like fire and like projection on water.
Uh-huh.
They have a Pirates of the Caribbean part that sends chills down my spine every single time.
I am a pirate. I am a pirate.
Oh, God.
All right, let's hit one news story here. And the news is, in the comics, the current author of Wonder Woman, Greg Rucka, has confirmed that Wonder Woman is queer. And what he means by that is, an Amazon doesn't look at another Amazon and say, you're gay. They don't. The concept doesn't exist.
They just... What does that mean?
The basic idea here is that because there are no men in the society, it's just normal to them to have sex and romantic relationships with other women.
Hmm. Okay. As with all of these stories, the question I always have right away is, why do we fucking care? Why is it a big deal?
Well, that's interesting because the headline is, why it matters that Greg Rucka finally admitted Wonder Woman is queer, and you're saying it doesn't matter.
Well, what does this fundamentally do, like, with story, character, whatever. Who cares? This is a...
Well, I'll tell you what it has to do with it. It is well established in the DC Comics, you know, DC Universe, that Wonder Woman and Batman are totally a thing, okay? Totally a thing. So making her a lesbian or making her queer or whatever it is, no. She and Bruce Wayne together forever. That's me snapping.
So is this, like, the equivalent of, like, guys in prison who are fine, you know, getting a BJ from another inmate, but they're totally not gay?
I mean, I think it is. And I think that, I don't think they're using queer, Elliot, in the old-fashioned sense. Apparently, queer nowadays means anyone that doesn't identify as cisgendered, straight, heteronormative, or whatever fucking terms they use. So basically, if you identify as anything, then just fucking the other gender and identifying as the gender you were born as. You're queer now.
So you are either cis or queer?
I think, you know, so.
Actually,
so I ironically, they created a binary system.
Elliot, what were you saying?
No, I was saying I'd prefer the term queer than LGBT. There's too many letters on there now.
Well, no, LGBTQI. Yeah, T plus or whatever.
Yeah, like I'm sick of that. No, just use queer. You don't need to specify all the different groups.
Yeah, when did it become math?
It is math. That's really funny that you said that, Daniel, because I was about to tell a story. So there are too many terms now, and I don't remember the terms that they are or that this person used, but there was this girl who basically wrote about Batman versus Superman and saw it as Superman is her Superman because he's an other. And for the first time, they made Superman an other that isn't afraid to embrace his otherness. So she appreciated that, and that he represents feminism and the oppression and social justice. So apparently she read social justice into Snyder's Superman, which takes a special kind of crazy.
Well, I mean, other in the sense of being an individualist as opposed to a collectivist. I mean, look at it that way. But
you're giving her far too much credit. She saw him as an other, as in the sense that straight cis white people other anyone who's different from them. That's how she saw him. As she was privileging the alien part of the story over the rest of it.
You know, I can tell. I'm immediately not going to get along with someone. Like there are just little like things that people do, and you're like, oh yeah, I could never hang with that guy. Anyone who uses the word other as a verb,
yeah,
can't hang with that person. Never going to have drinks together.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this was of course on Tumblr where she wrote all her long posts and everything.
What?
And on it, I don't remember the word she used, but she defined herself with two terms to define her gender and her sexuality and everything. And the two terms were contradictory. One was like, I only have sex with people that I'm emotionally connected to. And the other was like, but I have a very hard time being emotionally connected to people. So I'm only sexually attracted to people I'm emotionally connected to, but I'm not really into either gender and can't emotionally connect with them.
That was so she never has sex. So she basically never has sex.
Well, basically, it's revealing of her psychology that's why she identifies with the other, because she sees herself as this other special snowflake. But that's psychologizing.
So she has a Rosie Palmer relationship. Is that what we're talking about here?
Sure. The point I'm making, though,
five sisters.
Right. It's just these terms make no sense anymore.
She wasn't a two-spirited pansexual.
It might have been the term pansexual. I don't know.
By the way, speaking of earlier things the internet has done that we thought we were clever about, I was just looking up. I was thinking of the word triggered.
Uh-huh.
Saying there is only two, either cis or queer. I was saying that's triggering me. And I was like, oh, I'm going to take a picture of Trigger the horse and just put trigger on it. And I Googled it, and like 95 of them already exist. Yeah. I was like, how do you people know what trigger is? It's not even.
This is why. This is rant time. This is why I hate the internet, though. Because there are people who, they just want to be online and be the first to do this stuff. Like, this is when Katy Perry looked like the star on the halftime show and everyone put up The More You Know. Nobody's actually developing long-term detailed content anymore. Everyone just wants to be the next big meme that goes viral.
Yeah.
Like Harambe.
Right.
It's gonna be meme.
All right. So, in relevance to the stuff we talked about earlier with the news where we talked about the Black Lives Matter thing with the Harambe, which we just brought up again, and the men going their own way, there are a couple Reddits here that I really want to hit because I think they really are interesting. So let's head into Reddit on Reddit. Sony, stupid, Xbox, lame, PC, gaming all the way, EA, blow, Steam, rocks, got rest for my Firefox. These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't host it, but we will repost it. First Reddit. Men of Reddit, how would you feel about getting an unsolicited vag pic?
Ew.
Elliot, I know you would.
Elliot would think, my God, this is the grossest roast beef sandwich I've ever seen in my life. Someone should throw that shit out.
No, thank you. Keep that oyster away from me.
Now, I think this is an interesting question because of the concept of dick pics being randomly sent all the time exists, right?
I guess. I mean, I've never received one, so.
Oh, I'll send you one, and I'll see if James will send you one, too.
Excellent. First of all, whose vag pic? Kind of important to the question.
That's why it says unsolicited.
Well, like, it's not like I'm asking my wife for vag pics. Like, they're almost always going to be unsolicited, but it still matters who they're coming from.
Black vag matters, Daniel.
So, like, a stranger, just a random human being? Well, one, I'd be wildly confused. I'd first be like, do you know what this is? And I'd show it to my boss. Do you know what this is? What is this? Do you know what this is? And that'd be awkward.
Fired.
But then you'd have no idea. And and then second, I'd just be like, okay. And then I'd delete it. I'm very low pulse, though. I don't care. Like, if we were talking about when I was dating, again, wildly confused. One, how did you get my number? I don't text. And then two, like, is this going somewhere? What are, like, is this escalating? You're inviting me over?
No, then they text you right after, right, and say, oh, I'm sorry. That was supposed to go to my boyfriend. Wrong number.
Are you sure you haven't been dating women, Elliot? That was pretty accurate.
Did I forget your birthday? Like, what is this? What are we doing here?
Is this so, the beginning of the basically, miracle my life answer, as a gif?
Basically, the answer for me is wild confusion. Justin?
Well, there's two things here. The first is, I think it depends on the quality of the vag.
The quality of the...
Like, well, if it's fresh.
Well, if you take care of it, you clean it, like, you know, I think if it's nice to look at, it's fine. It's like, oh, okay, that's a nice vagina. Just like I would assume if you send a woman a dick pic and it's a nice dick, she'll just be like, oh, yeah, that's a nice dick. But if you send her, like, a gross dick, I would assume she'd be grossed out. It's the same thing.
I just picture you looking at it going, worst Georgia O'Keefe ever.
Well, and that's the second thing I want to get at. So, when we're talking about porn...
Come on! Not enough appreciation for that.
I'm laughing. Do you want me to do my fake laugh again?
Shorter. There you go. Talking about what?
Watching porn, right?
No.
Okay. Sure.
One of the reasons I don't like to watch porn... is like they'll randomly cut to the close-up of extreme close-up of the penis going in the vagina. And like, that's like instant anti-boner to me.
Show went a direction I did not anticipate.
So in
that's
the
what
same,
she said.
In the same sense, with a vag pic, like, I feel like if you're just sending the vagina, it's too decontextualized. Like, I need to see a wider shot to see more of you than just the vagina.
Okay, so now we've surveyed the men here. Let's mass psychologize to men in general. Because this is often a thing that women say, right? It's like, well, why do you send dick pics? Well, the answer, economically speaking, I don't send dick pics. Culture, men in general, why do you send dick pics? The answer is economically the same as why do men catcall? Because in some percentage of the time it works.
Well, and also...
And that's why they do it.
I think there's a difference here. And I think the difference, to speak to what you're saying, Daniel, is visually we're led to believe that the size of your manhood is attractive to women instantly, whereas with women it's the feel of their vagina, which you can't capture in a picture. So I think guys send the picture like that because they think, oh, if I am big and that will make me instantly attractive, well, then I've just upped my social stock here.
It's you just wait until the 360 video gets popular. And oh, then, God. And then, anyway, okay. So
gross.
My point with that is, economically speaking, like, do we think that men would care that women send vag pics? Like, would there be moral outrage like there is with women and dick pics? Like, first of all, let me get this out of the way. Just stop sending dick pics, guys. It's dumb. Can we just stop that? Can we just be normal human beings and interact with each other? Two, let's say we live in a world where that's going to continue to happen, because we do. Do we think that men would just be wildly outraged that women were sending pics of their vaginas? Seriously?
No.
Like, it would be like men would be thrilled, right?
Yes.
I think there's a wide, I think there's kind of a wide gulf though, because they, I don't think men would be angry. I don't, I know, right? Pun not intended.
I hope it's not a wide gulf.
But, pencil in the hallway. No, I
How
think
dare
that the,
you, pencil.
I don't think that they, I think guys would probably, they would not be outrageously offended, but I don't know that most guys would necessarily be thrilled.
Well, not like jumping up and down, my God, got another V-pick, but like most guys, like the average guy, would immediately, unequivocally take that as, I'm in for sex.
I would.
Just like instantaneously, like yep. This means sexual intercourse.
Yep. I would take
so
it that
I
way.
Think most guys would be perfectly fine with that.
Yep.
Anyway, we've spent way too much time on this topic.
All right, then let's hit the next and last Reddit. And this goes to, I think, what Elliot was saying about communication skills. I'd rather overhear a compliment than get one face to face. And I will paraphrase.
Is that a shower thought?
Yeah, it's a shower thought. And I will paraphrase the first comment here. The first comment is basically saying that overheard comments are more genuine because they're not said directly to you, whereas compliments that are sent directly to you are likely on some level disingenuous. And I'm paraphrasing there.
When did we become so fucking European? Jesus. That is insane. One, that we presume that that's true. And okay, maybe I'm being too generous to our culture, but I just don't think that that's true. I think, in fact, overheard compliments are often where you're talking about someone else, you're kind of playing things up sometimes or playing things down. It's when you're actually talking to the person and the moment you choose to give someone a compliment, I think you're gonna be more honest. I don't know. Maybe I'm projecting myself here, but I think this is dumb. I'd much rather receive a compliment to my face.
I think you are projecting, and I expected you to have this reaction because you're rational and healthy. Because I think a lot of people that they have this perspective because this is the interpersonal hostility perspective. The idea that no one can be direct with each other and just complimentary with each other.
It's insane to me. Like, it's one of the things that I make sure, I'm not a manager per se where I work, but I have managerial responsibilities. Like, I make an effort to both give people in my division criticism, like concerted criticism, as well as concerted praise. Like, this is what you've done really well. And I'm completely 100% genuine every time I say it. And I would never say it if I didn't mean it, because it would mean nothing otherwise. And how is this person supposed to grow as a human being if you aren't honest with them?
But let me give you the converse of that. Like, I like that. That's the perfect managerial style. It's good. It's healthy. But let me give you the opposite perspective. From someone who's not used to receiving compliments like that, at my job I'm at that I've been at for like a year and a half, my boss is rational in the same sense you are. He coached a lot of sports, so he knows how to do that kind of technique. And when he first started saying thank you for your work, or like you did a good job, I looked around and I said, why, what did I do wrong?
Am I being fired?
Yeah, I was like, what? I said, is somebody mad? Did somebody get upset at what I did? And he's like, no, I'm just giving you a compliment. I was like, yeah, but why? Like, what happened?
You worked at the Ayn Rand Institute for too long.
Well, and how I grew up as well. Like, and that's the point, is if you're not used to it, it seems very foreign to you. So I've had to work my way through this PTSD to just say thank you to compliments and like realize he's just being nice because he thinks I did a good job. And he wants
I think it's a New England thing. It's a New England thing too, I think. I have several friends from Massachusetts, Rhode Island, up in that area, and they actually have a very similar disposition to what you used to have, where they didn't trust compliments. They didn't. They were just very suspicious. If you are nice about that, like a lot of people who, when they come down to Orlando, they are just like blown away by the friendliness here because it's a hospitality city. So a lot of people, they automatically have that suspicion, like, why is this person being nice to me?
And you new sub theory. New Englanders are the closest we have to British.
Well, Jesus, what British the fuck gave thing. It away? The fact that it's New England?
New England.
Yes. No one was saying this explicitly. I wanted to say it explicitly.
How do you say it more explicitly? It's called New England.
You, fuck you guys, both of you.
We love you too.
No, we weren't. Okay, fuck you. Forget it. I'm out. Peace. I didn't learn shit this episode.
Okay. Is that your final answer?
Yeah, fuck you. Go away.
All right, Elliot, what did you learn?
I learned that gorilla costume is apparently racist for a lot of people nowadays.
Yeah, guy trying to get me to go to your bank by waving that sign and twirling it around. You're racist.
Yeah, well, Justin, did you happen to learn anything, Your Highness?
Yeah, I learned that you apparently don't realize the way culture transfers to different areas, especially based upon the name of the city and or state. Did you know that New York is Dutch?
Go fuck yourselves. And, yeah, well, if you want to put up with these assholes, you can continue to listen to the show via iTunes, but I'm out. what else do we do? Patreon, something, Twitter.
Keep the lights on. We have all the social media.
Yeah. Yeah, it's things. We
tell
do it.
Tell a friend. Can we really do the tell a friend thing? Like, please?
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, it's sort of the only real way to grow the podcast, like, because we're not going to spend money advertising this shit.
Well, unless somebody donates fuckloads of money.
Nah.
We do have a promotional campaign coming up for our Batman versus Superman episode.
We do. We're not spending money on it. I mean, you did.
I did.
But that's fine. You kind of accidentally spent money on it. You'll understand what that is when it comes up. We'll explain that. But tell a friend. That's how this show grows. That's how these assholes get more audience members and applause. And then, look, Batman v Superman Snyder Series podcast coming out very soon. Be on the lookout for that. It's going to be epic. It's going to be
huge. It's a very
good
episode.
It's very good. Had a lot of fun recording it. They say, so we know when it's coming out, and we'll let you know when we know.
Well, I can
we'll
tell
let you know when we're ready
out.
To let you know. How about that?
Yeah.
Oh, we're ready to let them know?
Yeah.
Well, fuck you for not telling me that.
Well, you know when it's coming out. It's coming out on the 18th. Or the 17th if you're up late at night and on your iTunes when I upload it.
Of?
October. Sorry.
Very good. Thank you. Excellent.
Just the 17th or 18th of any month. Be ready. On those 2 days of any month, be ready.
All yes. I'm watching the Vikings game on my laptop right now. Taking the Giants 17-3. But you know what I noticed is the Vikings gloves, some of them are yellow and they look like flags. Like they wave their hands around and I'm like, oh, it's a penalty. Nope, it's that guy's hand. Nope, it's a penalty. Nope, it's that guy's hand. No, it's a penalty.
Well, get ready because, wait, it's already October. Why aren't they wearing pink? Does that only start week 5?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm apparently not aware of breast cancer if they're not wearing pink, so.
All right, are we good here?
We're good.
Finally.
This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.
Fuck you.